Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman, and I'm sitting here with a very special host named...
The other special host. My name is Darren.
The other special Larson. Darren Larson. We've kicked off, I guess, a couple weeks ago, a brand new series. We've been in the Word of Our Testament, Word of Their Testimony, talking about people's stories. And now we're in a series called Lampstands. And that's been really cool because it's sort of like pastors or churches' stories. Darren, why are we calling this Lampstands and why are we doing this right now?
Yeah, the picture in Revelation chapter 1 and 2 is that Jesus shows up as walking amongst the lampstands, which represent both physical churches in that context in Revelation and the ancient world, as well as kind of symbolically that Jesus is amongst all the churches, the number seven churches, the number of completion.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's this vision that I've had for the church for years and years, kind of as I've set up why I show up on Sunday mornings is because I know that Jesus is going to be there.
Yeah.
And so we've been doing this series to kind of bring stories of other churches and pastors to encourage people who listen, people at Imprint Church or people who are outside of Imprint that are listening to this, to build unity and a bit of kind of a connection to other church and what God is doing.
I think some excitement just about what God is doing in other places, because it can be easy just to stay laser focused on what's going on at your local church and rah-rah. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to be excited about what God is doing, but God is also doing a lot of other things.
Yes.
And so it's cool to see him at work there. Why did we decide to do this right now?
Yeah, to promote unity in the body of Christ, to promote a little bit of a desire to want to be in this together,
to cooperate
and to help our people understand that the church is more than just the location you show up to on Sunday morning. It's the people of God everywhere.
Yeah.
And we've got a great people of God in the city of Seattle.
We really do.
And the greater King County, Snohomish County area that we get to rejoice in. We've actually heard from other people outside of those areas too. But could I introduce our guest today?
Yeah, I would love for you to introduce our very special guest.
Because I am really grateful for our guest today. I sat down at a board meeting about 11, 12 years ago and pitched the idea of Imprint Church to a board of church called Northview Community Church and said, I'm a young guy. I was younger then. And I said, I'm going to take a risk at planting a church and I'd love for you to pray for us and support us. And the pastor of that church was none other than our guest today. And this church decided to both pray for us and financially support us. Even the pastor got up on a Sunday morning. I preached at their church after that. And the pastor got up after me and said, hey, if you want to go with this Imprint Church, you can leave right now and you should go. And he was totally serious. It was like the most kingdom-minded thing ever.
Yeah.
And so I have this man sitting in front of me right now. Can you introduce yourself, my friend?
Sure. My name is Steve Mitchells, and I'm honored to be here.
We're so grateful to have you here.
Yeah, we're pumped to have you, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
I didn't grow up here. I grew up in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I grew up right outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Grew up in a little town called Sugar Bush, Wisconsin. I joke, it's a very famous town. All 30 of us got along just fabulously.
It's amazing.
And but I'm, Wisconsin farm country. I'm the oldest of eight. My dad comes from a family of 15, right? That kind of background, Depression era families, working the farm. The more kids you had, the more work you
got. Exactly. Yeah, you'd have to pay them.
That's a long gone thing. But back in the day, it was a big deal. And so I grew up there, and I kind of grew up with a Norman Rockwell background. I'd wish my growing up on anybody. Man, it was great. And we had the Packers and Vince Lombardi, and we were kings of the world.
Lots
so it
cheese.
Was awesome. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Are you still a Packers fan to this day?
I'm all in on the Hawks.
All right.
As a matter of fact, when the Hawks play the Packers, we always bet cheese against salmon.
That's oh, really?
With
so
my family.
Funny. That's fantastic.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I lived in Chicago for a time, and so I got to like the Green Bay Packers because it annoyed my Chicago friends much. Yeah. You know,
that's the most contrarian thing I've ever heard.
I was like, I love the Seahawks, but I'm going to like the Green Bay Packers too while I live here.
Such a Darren Larson thing to do.
So they're my second team.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in a Christian family then?
I grew up in a Catholic background.
Okay.
If you take Green Bay, 20-mile square radius was 95% Catholic.
Wow.
The only cult we had were the Lutherans.
Were they Swedish Lutherans? Because that's what I
guess. Is it too cold for the Mormons? Or, anyway.
No, that was kind of, it was all, we're all the immigrants. So.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So I grew up, as a matter of fact, if you look at a map of the state, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, you can tell who settled there by the names of the towns. So we had a Poland, Wisconsin, and Luxembourg, Wisconsin, and you just could tell.
Oh, interesting.
That's where the Belgians settled. That's where the Polish settled. Huh. That's where the Germans settled. Yeah, yeah. It's all broke up like that.
That's funny. And so other people would know when they're immigrating where to go, basically. Oh, yeah. Crazy. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, I grew up with the old rotary phones, and if you picked up, you'd hear a click, and they'd start talking in the mother tongue, right? Because then if you couldn't talk, they knew it was a kid on the line and not an adult.
That's because they're speaking English at that point.
That's long time ago, and that doesn't exist anymore.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. So growing up in a Catholic family, was there knowledge of Jesus? Did you meet Jesus later? Did you, because you could be Catholic and Christian at the same time, you know?
Yeah, kind of. I grew up in what I would call very entrenched Catholicism.
Yep.
We were still, matter of fact, I was an altar boy till I was 18.
Wow.
And we did the masses in Latin.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so I spoke Latin and, you know, it was a great life. It was so connected. We talk about community out here, but the Midwest had it in spades in terms of the churches did what the schools did, what the businesses did. It all lined up.
Totally.
So there wasn't this weird separation that we experience here on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the danger to that is everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And so when it comes to faith, you kind of, well, what are you? Well, I'm Catholic. Well, why? Because I'm Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right? It was like I'm an American,
mm-hmm.
right? And so Jesus sure was there,
yep.
but I didn't have any kind of knowledge. I just knew. If you said, do you believe there's a God? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? Do you believe that Jesus was born of the Virgin Mary? Well, I'm Catholic. I believe that more than you do.
Yeah. Right.
Do you believe that Jesus died on the cross for your sins? Well, of course he did. Do you believe he rose from the dead? Well, sure. Are you saved? I don't know. Right? I had those conversations down in North Carolina, and I was lost. I didn't know what they meant.
Because you were out of the context of this was tradition or this was heritage or whatever it was.
You grew up being a good person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're Catholic and you're American and you're a good person and that's what you do.
Crazy.
Yeah. So a personal relationship with Jesus, there was no, you know, Jesus was way out there somewhere. He did his Jesus things. You were here, you did your things, and you hoped you were good enough that he'd take you in.
Yeah. I think that's pretty common for a lot of people. Yeah. And even today, it's still kind of, I mean, that's a different era, but I think it also connects with a lot of people. That kind of feels like what's the right religious feel around where we live or something.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So when would you say you encountered Jesus and the grace of God for the first time then?
So a short version of a very long story.
I bet it is.
Is in high school, I did very well in all that stuff. And so I launched off into college. And in college, you could do whatever you wanted to because the authority structure was gone, right?
Totally, yeah.
So I did. Put it mildly, the first year we burned the world up. The second year the world burned us up. And I ended up selling books down in North Carolina for a summer to the Southwestern Company.
Oh.
And I'd been warned about going down to the Bible Belt and that kind of stuff. And people, I'd show up on their doorstep and they go, well, are you saved? And I go, well, I don't know. What are you talking about? And they would say that same, you know, do you believe God, Virgin Mary?
Yeah. And you're like, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they go, well, are you saved? I go, I don't know. And I just thought it was a different language. I didn't. Or a different way to approach it. Very hot down there and humid.
That's true.
And so there was
from Tennessee.
I'm from Tennessee. I'm from the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah, you are. And so anyways, there was this little church in a magnolia grove, and it was cooler during the heat of the day, so I'd go in there. And on the back wall, they had chick tracks. You know, nobody knows what chick tracks are.
I know
are
what
anymore,
chick tracks are. That's crazy.
I don't. Tell me what these are.
Chick tracks are little cartoon packets or pamphlets that have great little cartoons and stories to them, and they include scripture. And then at the end, would you like to accept Christ as your Lord and Savior?
Oh, so different than a tract. I know what a tract is.
Yes,
but like
some of them are a little strange.
Oh, interesting.
I'll say that. So, yeah,
and some of them were really
some
cool.
of them were really great. Yeah,
yeah. So that it was the cutting edge technology of the
it was. It was like Twitter, but you know,
on paper.
Yeah,
yeah. And so I would read one of those and get to the part you want. No, I'd stuff that back and I'd pick another one up. But in the course of the summer, I became aware of all kinds of scripture, like Romans and stuff like that. I had never read the Bible, right? Mm. And so I thought, well, if I've missed this step, maybe I should do that. So I prayed in that church and then came out freaked out because I thought the sky would roll back and angels would be going, gotcha, you know.
Yeah.
And I had grown up with, I don't know if people could relate to this, but I grew up with, you know, it's okay to believe in God, but don't become a crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't be a fanatic. Yeah.
Just don't go over the edge because you're going to lose it. And so I kind of thought like, well, maybe I've lost it, you know, sort of thing. But then nothing happened. And so I went back to Wisconsin, went back to school, and people were back, and Mitch is back. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, and off we went again, right? And it was at that point that God set in motion a whole series of things that took place, and we wouldn't have enough time to tell today. But basically, the essence of it, relationally, he connected me to a number of people. Hmm. There was a guy in Tennessee who was selling books, and he had gone out to Oklahoma. He came back through town, saw me, and we were talking, and he said, hey, you're from Green Bay. You know the Packers, right? So yeah. He says, well, you know the Coach Bob Lord? And I said, no. Interesting enough, they, all these biblical names. So it's Coach Bob Lord, and his name was Tim Emanuel.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Think God was trying to say something there?
Yeah.
And so he says, well, I know his daughter. I go to school with his daughter at Chapel Hill. Her name's Martha. I says, well, is she good looking? Oh, yeah, she's a babe. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is... And he said, would you take a letter back for me? And I thought, I'm thinking Packer tickets on the 50-yard line, autographed footballs, meeting a good-looking girl. I thought, this is great. So I grabbed the letter, got back home, called. Mom answers the phone, right? The death knell of every dream.
Yeah.
And,
that's back in the day when you couldn't call a cell phone. You had to call the family house.
You
had to talk to the parents.
And so I call and I said, hey, is Martha there? She says, no, she left. And I said, oh, okay, well, when's she coming back? Well, no, she's gone. I said, well, I know, but when will she come back? And she was kind of stuttering because I'd caught her off balance. But she said, I'm sorry, Steve, she just drove out of the driveway to go back to school at North Carolina. I went, oh, rats. Mm. There go my Packer tickets. You know? And so I kept that letter in my wallet and forgot about it and went back to school. And on our campus, I saw these posters one day walking through campus. Coach Bob Lord of the Green Bay Packers coming to speak.
Wow.
And it was sponsored by the Navigators, right? And I didn't know what the Navigators were.
No.
The Navigators, you know, this big
Jesus, yeah, big
discipleship,
mission
yeah, kind of stuff. I've got tons of friends in it, and but at the time I had no clue. I thought it was the sailing club at school, right?
It sounds like it.
And so there were two guys on my floor, Mike and Mike. There was Big Mike and Little Mike, and so our floor was kind of a floor that moms wouldn't like.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, and these two guys were on that floor, and why they were on the floor, I have no idea. It must have been their idea of ministry or something like that. But so I go knock on the door, and Big Mike comes through. So little Mike wasn't that little. He was 6'1".
Oh, my gosh.
But Big Mike was the 3-time state wrestling champ at 189 pounds. He was a hoss.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he comes to the door, and I say, hey, Mike, you know, I'm gonna go to that sailing meeting that you're putting on. Because I knew these two guys were in the sailing club.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he goes, what? I said, you know the one with the Packer coach? He goes, oh, Steve, that's awesome.
Oh, man.
That's so cool. I tell you what, we'll even pay for your ticket. And I thought, oh, you got to have a ticket? And like, oh, my gosh, this is formal. And well, it is a Packer coach. So, you know, okay.
Yeah.
And so
Lord's going to talk about sailing.
Yeah, let's go see. So you ever go to something where what you thought was going to happen, what actually happened are two different things?
Yes.
Awesome. So I show up. I'm in my Oshkosh by gosh bib overalls, cut off t-shirt, walk right to the front because I want to meet this guy, right? And I'm sitting there. And the first thing I notice is that people are dressed up. So I'm kind of looking out of the corner of my eye going,
I made a huge mistake.
Yeah. This isn't going well. And then these two girls come out, and they later became great friends, but they came out and they started singing, playing music really good. And I went, wow, that's incredible. But then words like love and Jesus, and I'm thinking, no, what is going on? I thought, well, okay, as long as the Packer coach talks about the Packers, we'll be fine. So he comes out and says, hey, we're going to take an intermission break, and I'm going to come back, but my name's Coach Bob Lord of the Green Bay Packers, and I want to share with you how Jesus has radically changed my life.
Wow.
So I'm sitting there outside. I'm very cool and calm. Inside, I'm going, like just freaking out, like, get me out of here, right? Yeah. And so I'm going to bolt, but who's taking tickets at the door now but Mike and Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so I'm thinking.
They didn't buy you a ticket. They just snuck you in because they were the bouncers.
Yeah. And so I had to stay. And after I walked up to the coach, told him that story about me and the guy, gave the letter so he could get it to his daughter.
Yeah.
But I could tell there was something about that group of people that was different. Mm. They had something I didn't have. Now I know it was the Holy Spirit. Yeah. But at the time, I was clueless. Okay. So I started hanging out with them, and it was really easy to hang out with the Christians and party at the same time, because the Christians were always up in the morning studying, and the partiers were never there, and the partiers were always at the bars at night, and the Christians were never in the bars.
Sure.
If you could get by on just a little bit less sleep than other people, you could do both.
You could do both. Yeah. Yep. So that's what I did. And then I broke my ankle playing soccer that spring, so I ended up back home in Green Bay. Well, in Green Bay, I didn't know any Christians. I just knew Catholics, right? And so I kind of just thought, well, that was kind of a weird college thing, and I let it go. And God started to move in my life in a big way, and I was actually going to work. I worked in a powdered milk factory in Denmark, Wisconsin. And God had been getting a little too close, so I figured God didn't like sin, so if I sinned badly, he would stay away from me, right? So that's what I did, and I'm going to work at 11 at night, and I'm hungover and a bunch of other stuff, and I am yelling at God, right? You're messing my life up. You're messing my parties up. You're really making me angry. So just knock it off. There's no way I'm becoming a Christian. And I literally heard the words, oh, yeah? Watch this. And I just about drove the truck off the road. I parked. I was on the gravel. I was like, what the blank was that?
Yeah.
I thought, man, you've done too many drugs. You're losing it, right? You've lost it now. You're hearing voices. This is not good. So I get to work. And I worked in a powdered milk factory. You guys ever drink powdered milk?
Yeah.
It's gross, right?
It's gross.
Yeah.
It's not
okay,
the best.
Well.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, you brought it up.
So how they make it is they condense milk down to condensed milk, and then they spray it into a huge dryer, and it comes down, and it comes down like snowflakes, and then there's a thing that scraper that comes, takes it. And I worked downstairs, so that came down into a shaker, shake all the lumps out. Right, and then it would come through a cloth sock, and it would be a big hopper, and then that hopper would get full, and then it would come out, and there would be this clamp, and you'd take like 100-pound dog food bags, right?
Yeah.
Put it on there, right? Run it through the sower, put it on a pedestal, and then you would stack the pallets. And the guy who was running
this is the most Wisconsin thing I've ever heard
really
in my life.
Yeah.
And the guy running upstairs was old Tuffy, and he had run that thing for 35 years, so he just put on automatic pilot, and he was sitting in the coffee room, right? So I'm putting on, and I'm still stewing over this, oh, yeah, watch this kind of thing. And I run the thing through the sewing machine, and one of the bags drops, so I hit the foot pedal so it'd move up, and it just sprung apart. Screws and levers just went everywhere, and I went, oh, no. So now I've lost my elevator to move the bags, you know? And then, so while I'm taking the bags off, I had run a bag through the sewer, and I hear this whoop, whoop, whoop. Well, it wadded the tape up like the size of a softball. I was trying to sew through, and then it broke the arm of the sewing machine. Huh. So I got a broke.
Yeah, everything's breaking.
Well, it gets worse. So then then I put a bag on the clamp, right? Fills it all up, pull it off. Powdered milk keeps running out, hits the floor. It's starting to look like White Christmas in there, right? And I don't know if you know about powder, but it's really sticky. So it's powdered milk on a cement floor is like, you know, sawdust on a dance floor.
Yeah.
And so I'm banging my shins into stuff. And so I'm hitting that and shutting it down. Well, the bin was fuller than I thought, and the sock cloth between the bin and the shaker filled up solid. And as soon as it did that, it shredded it. And now powdered milk is dumping through the room by the ton, right? And I am just fierce. I'm so mad at God. And I said, I can't take it anymore. All right, if you want what's left of my life, you can have it. And by the way, you better not ever dump me. Right? And there were a few other words in English that were in there that are very inappropriate for a salvation prayer.
Sure.
Right? Okay. But literally at 3 a.m, standing there in 2 feet of powdered milk, I came to know Christ.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's
amazing.
That's how I came to know Christ. And I almost got killed by my dad the next day because he hauled milk to that factory and they found out what happened. My dad was a 5'10" pocket Hercules. He came boiling down there ready to tattoo my hide to those pallets.
Oh, man.
And he said, "You fell asleep." And I said, "Dad, I'll guarantee you one thing. A lot happened.
I did not
fall asleep."
Yeah. Both of your experiences there were kind of by yourself, like the chick track, you called it chick track, and like you're in the back of a church, and then, but you had some people along the way that were actually helping you too.
Believers, you a little bit. God kept circling believers. So like Stanley Kantz is the guy who pretty much led me to the Lord. He worked at that factory. He was like 6'5", 280, huge old butter churner, right? Forearms, take your head and like grapefruit kind of thing. And he would ask me, "So Steve, tell me about college." So I'd tell him all about college and he goes, "Oh, well, that's okay. Well, anything else?" "Yes. You know, Stanley, there's this weird group of people." I said, "They're kind of cool, but I don't know what they really are. So what are they called?" I said, I don't really know. I think I think they're like born again Christians or something like that." And Stanley lights up and goes, "Oh, Steve, I'm a born-again Christian." I went, "Oh, no.
Not another one."
I mean, it would just, I'd never run into Christian life, and suddenly everywhere I turn around, I'm running. "You're a believer, aren't you?"
That's amazing.
Because they're smiling. "You want to know Jesus?" "No, shut up."
Yeah, leave me alone.
Just leave me alone. And Stanley says, "Well, Steve, let me tell you what you need to know when you become a Christian." I said, "Stanley, thank you. I really appreciate that, but I'm not going to become a Christian." "Well, I know, but when you do, here's what you're going to need to know." "No, Stanley, didn't you just hear? I'm telling
it's
you.
It's not going to happen, Stanley."
"Yeah.
Yes."
And Stanley would say, "Steve, I know, but when you do, here's what you're going to need to know."
That's amazing. Right? And God's like, "Watch this."
There were a number of things like that were happening. There's a lot more to that story. But in essence, I came to Christ in a crash, boom, thunder conversion story at 3 a.m. in a powdered milk factory.
And the Lord got a hold of you.
Yep. That's how
that's amazing.
Out. So from there, how did you get into ministry? Like, let's
transition. Because it probably wasn't overnight. I'm going to pastor a church.
Yeah.
Watch this tie. So Stanley Kantz went to Bethel Baptist Church in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The pastor happened to be Jan Hettinger.
What?
I go that far back with Jan. Nate was 7 at the time.
Amazing.
And Stanley calls Coach Bob Lord, who also attends Bethel Baptist Church in Green Bay.
Oh, man.
"Hey, there's this young man at work, and he wants to come to a Bible study. And I know, Bob, if you called him, he would come." Because I had told him the story about the letter, right, for his daughter.
Totally.
So we lived in a basement, and we had black lights and big speakers, and we painted the poles flat black, so when the black lights on, you couldn't see them. People get stoned and walk into them. We go, "Yeah, I got one." Okay.
What year was this?
Would be 1977.
Okay, I was wondering if it was in the late 70s. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep.
And so this whole party's going on. The phone rings. I pick it up. "Hey, Animal Farm, what can we do for you?" And there's this pause. "Hello, is Steve Mitchell's there?" And I go, "Yeah, you're talking to me." He said, "Well, this is Coach Bob Lord of the Green Bay Packers." And I'm like, "Oh!" Because Packer coaches don't call nobodies, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He was the head coach.
He was the running backs coach.
Running backs coach. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And I'm like, and I could hear him saying, "You there?" Yeah. And everybody else is, what's going on over on the phone? You know? And I like, "We'd like you to, Stanley says you're interested in the Lord and want to come to a Bible study, and I'd like to invite you to our Bible study." And you ever at a place where your head's thinking one thing and your mouth says another?
Almost all the time.
Yeah, my head is saying H-E double toothpicks, no, and my mouth says, "Oh, I'd be honored to come."
That's amazing.
And I hung up and I went, "What did I just do? Oh, my gosh." So they changed my schedule at work, so I couldn't go. So next week he calls me back. And I'm thinking, they do this more than once? Like, really? And so he invites me. So the only Bible I had was one of those great big Catholic Bibles, like 2 feet by 3 feet by a foot thick, right?
With all the extra books of the Bible in it and all that.
So I whip that sucker under my arm, and I'm heading out the apartment. And my brother Paul sees me, and he says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to a Bible study with a Packer coach." He says, "You're kidding." I said, "No." He said, "Do you think I could come?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "I'll tell you what, let's go. And if they kick us out, we'll go to Dairy Queen or something." You know, he said, "Oh, that sounds great." So we go to that Bible study. Jan's leading it. It's Revelation.
Wow.
And I had never read any of the books of the Bible, so I was lost from the get-go. And Jan asked questions, and I answered the first three questions wrong. And I was a straight-A student in high school, so I'm not a dummy. I was like, okay, now wait a minute. What's going on here? I started freaking out, thinking, you know, you thought you were so hip and cool. Well, you've spent 22 years being an idiot, and these people are way past you. And, you know, by the time I found the book they were talking about, they were three books past me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I went into a panic, and as a result, I read the Bible through twice in 6 months. Okay. And I had the time at the time I was between jobs, and so I just read. And little did I know, doing that, I actually passed a whole bunch of people up.
Sure.
Because a lot of people never read it.
Yeah.
And so that's how ministry started. They said, "Hey, would you start working with this group or work with the college and career?" They first chucked me into Youth for Christ because they didn't know what to do with me because they were afraid of me because I was sort of a wild man and they were afraid I'd wreck the kids at the church.
Yeah, yeah.
So, charm. It was great.
That's amazing.
I owe her everything. And so I started teaching that. And then leadership came by a completely backwards sort of thing. Is there was a Christian education conference, and I asked them, could I go? You know, I don't have any money, but I'd be glad to do dishes after, if not realizing it was for free.
Oh.
And they said, "Oh, you'll do dishes? Awesome. You can come." So
come with us and do the dishes.
Yeah. So we're in the kitchen doing the pots and pans. And of course, they're church pots and pans, and they look grody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just, yeah. You can't tell when they're clean.
If everybody owns them, nobody owns them, right?
Yeah.
And my dad was in the Navy, and my dad had taught us how to scrub pots.
Yeah.
And so I said, "Hang on a second." I run down to the local store, grab a bunch of Brillo and pads and stuff, and come back, and I commence on those pots, right? And by the time I'm done, they're shiny clean.
Yeah.
And and they said, "You know, if he cares about pots that much, he'd be really good with people." And so that's how I started teaching the college and career group.
Wow.
At the church.
At the Baptist church there.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And did it turn into a job at some point too?
No, not there.
Okay.
How that happened was, okay, there's a lot of stories here.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. So I started teaching that group. And then playing softball, I broke my ankle. And then I was also installing bulk tanks in dairy farms.
Wow.
And I was putting a leg in, and a jack kicked out, and it crushed this pinky finger.
Yikes.
We'll take care of the video so you can't see
it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Blood shooting out. So I walk over to the sink, cleaning it out. I'm in shock. Next thing I know, people are dabbing my face and stuff. Well, I had passed out, smacked my face off the concrete ledge, off the valve of the tank, and off the grate on the floor.
So you just bounced down like
so
a ping.
Yeah. I look like a car wreck, right? So I have this smash face of a pinky that's this big around. I got one broken ankle, and I'm coming into church on crutches, right? And Sunday supervisor comes to me and said, "Hey, Steve, our son, the adult teacher, is sick." We were teaching the same book together. "He's sick. Would you be able to cover both classes?" And I looked at him and said, "Well, what the heck? Do I look healthy to you?" He says, "No, but you're all we got." So,
I go into
the auditorium. Yeah, I go in the auditorium, and it turns out that it is the annual meeting for the Baptist General Conference, which is, of course, the forerunner to Converge.
Converge, yeah.
Yep. Right? And so there's all these dignitaries and stuff in there, and I get up. So I teach, and then I tell them, "Okay, we got to break into small groups," and nobody moves, right? So I whip my foot up on the pew, and I said, "See these toes? They're turning purple. If you do not move in the next 30 seconds, I'm going to pass out right in front of you." You never saw people scatter so fast in your life. It was great. And after, this old guy came up. He had to be in his 80s. And his name was Hans Jurgensen. Hans Jurgensen is the father to Marilyn Mitchell. Okay, Marilyn Mitchell is the mom to Amy Hedinger. So it was Amy's grandfather.
Oh my gosh.
Came up, and he's a Swedish accent. "Young man, you do very good. You just keep doing what you're doing. God's going to use you," right? And and I was like, "Wow, who's that dude?"
Yeah.
Unbeknownst, later, they were there to candidate Jan for North Shore.
Crazy.
Out here in the Northwest. So they go to North Shore. Jan accepts the candidacy, and then they
Which
were
North Shore was pretty small at that point, small. Right? Like, yeah. It's just a small kind of living room church almost.
And they were going to hire a part-time person from SPU or something for youth work. And Jan said, well, could I bring somebody along that I've been working with? And they kind of threw it back and forth. And Hans stood up in the meeting. He says, I have met this young man.
Oh, no way.
We have to bring this young man here. God is going to use him. And so they agreed because Hans said. So I wound up.
So all that happened in one night because you broke your foot.
I wound up as the youth pastor at North Shore Baptist Church, which is now North Shore Community.
Yeah.
I wound up as the youth pastor because of Hans Jorgensen.
Was that something you were excited by? Or was that just kind of a thing that you watched happen and you're like, I guess I'm moving
to
Washington?
Yeah, no, I was thrilled.
Okay,
I was
good.
I was whatever God wanted to do. I would. When I crashed into the kingdom, I crashed all in.
Yeah,
I was 100% on fire, flame on, burn the world up for Jesus. I was ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
And plus, I was in high school and college. I wrestled, so you mess with me, I knock you through a wall,
and
you'll get saved in the process.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
That was kind of how I was.
It goes back to God's word to you. Watch this. I mean, seriously,
it really was.
You know, you get called by an old man who tells you to go be a youth pastor, basically, and you are.
It's pretty funny.
So Jan invited me to come. I said, "Pack the bags, let's go." And so Jan and Sharm came out in October of 1979. I stayed home to have Thanksgiving with my family. I arrived at King Station on December 2nd, 1979. Jan picked me up in his old brown van, and off we went to the Northwest.
Were there any youth in the church at that point?
There were five.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could concentrate. Five. That was great.
And
the first week
them.
I was there, they gathered everybody they could out of the wood, right? All the college and career, all the high school.
Kirkland was the, well, actually it was Bothell back then. It was probably the Boondocks, right?
It was.
Like
nothing like it is today. And they had 58 people in the basement. I talked about Jesus, and 2 weeks later we had five.
All right.
What a successful start to ministry.
Yeah. I tell guys all the time, that's exactly how you want it to go.
That's amazing.
So, it built very quickly from that. And so I ended up being the youth guy at North Shore for 18 and a half years.
Awesome.
Then the family ministry guy for six. And I seem to have these half year increments.
Yeah.
And now I've just finished 17 and a half years at Northview.
Yeah.
And my last message was this last Sunday.
And you are officially retired at the end of this
officially
week, is that
retired,
right? That's amazing.
That's amazing.
Which means I'm freed up from being a head guy, so now I can go ask Jesus what I do for the next chapter.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next season of life.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Rex.
No, I think we're probably going to ask the same
question. No, I just want to hear about your experiences at North Shore and ministry there and how did it develop you into kind of being eventually a church lead
North
pastor?
Shore was awesome.
That's great.
North Shore was awesome. It just took off.
Yeah.
And Jan was the right leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We collected a group. There was a time when anybody in the entire Northwest would give their right arm to be on that staff.
Yeah.
It was, we went from 90 to 120, and that would be evangelistically speaking. That's cats, diapers, dogs, and everything.
Yep.
It was close to 2,000 people, and just the Lord blew it up.
That's amazing.
Youth group we had between high school and junior high, we had 400.
That's amazing.
450
What was it like to watch that happen? I mean, because you watched it go from like living room to
That. I think it's like something all of us, you don't realize it because you're in it.
Yeah.
You're just doing.
Yep.
And you just expected that to happen, and you just expected that to work, and you didn't realize that that was abnormal, or you didn't realize that was different than what God was doing in other places. Mm-hmm. So Jan was really good at not being proud and not building pride in the team, and so we were in the kingdom paradigm, kingdom gospel. And so humility is a huge part of that. And so we were just doing the Lord's work and we were doing it as a team, and the team liked each other and people knew that, and we hung out together and we did. And so it was the greatest run.
That's Do you awesome. Think that made a healthy church community, that humility and stuff that was preached from kind of Jan Hennigan down to the rest of the staff? Do you feel like that created a healthy environment?
Oh,
for you guys?
Jan and Sharm were instrumental in that. I mean, what you saw is what you got.
Yeah.
Right. And there was no.
No pretense.
No window dressing. Yeah. No pretense. Yeah. None of that stuff. So it was an absolute fabulous. And during those years, we did all the Oregon Coast trips and stuff that became legendary. And, it was just a fabulous, fabulous deal.
Yeah. That's cool. So you went, I keep cutting you off, Rex, because I want to ask more questions.
No, it's okay.
Steve's like the most interesting guy in
the
world.
Yeah, I know. This has been great so far. We haven't had to say very much, and I've learned a lot about cheese.
Yeah.
Milk.
Yeah. The question I had, and it's probably, I don't know if it was the same one you had, but you were, so you were student, and then you were kind of family, and then you were, when did Northview enter the picture? Mm-hmm. When did that switch over? How did that come about?
Sure. Again, a lot of story, but basically what happened is that Kevin Cavanaugh was on our staff. So Jan was the dad.
I know Kevin's son pretty well, actually.
Kevin was the evangelist. Yeah, Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Yeah, he's a great buddy. Matter of fact, I just had lunch with him down at, what's that, Lifted Taco?
Lifted Taco.
I was just at Lifted Taco.
I was just there.
Tom Regan's
awesome.
In Vegas right now, and he still went to Lifted Taco
today.
Probably
so.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, really?
He just goes to Lifted Taco all the time.
Hi, Tom.
So, yeah, exactly.
But so anyways, and then I was kind of the heart person. Mm. I was the glue person that kind of held everything together. And so that team, that dynamic just really made it fly. It wasn't centered on just one. It was a whole group of guys.
That's cool.
So that was really cool. And then Kevin left to take a church up in Canada, to answer your question, Rex, is he went up to Canada, and then Jan came to me and said, look, I know you love youth, but you've got to help me out. You know everybody. You've been in everybody's home. I need help. I don't know what to do with this. And so I stepped away from youth to take on the adult ministries, which was kind of a death experience.
Mm-hmm.
I had dreamed of being the old youth guy, like in his 60s, with a whole team of young lions and, invading the Northwest.
That's
with
a cool
the gospel
thing. Yeah.
So that was really kind of a death of a vision sort of thing.
Totally.
And
you had 18 years of youth, didn't you say? Was that
18
right?
18 and a half.
Man. Yeah. So no wonder you're feeling the bit of a grief of that.
Yep. Yeah. A great run.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great run. And then the family ministering was really good. And then where the change came in is North Shore had grown.
Yeah.
Like, so I was the heir apparent, but the reality was is that I'm much more of a shepherd.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a CEO guy. Mm-hmm. And all the guys on the board who are my buddies came and said, Steve, you know what? You have the heart, but you don't have the motor.
Yeah.
You don't have the skill set that's necessary for something this big. So then I was really in trouble. Because what do I do next?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because when Jan retires, wow, what do we do? Well, of course, then Jan went down with that stroke.
An aneurysm or whatever. Yeah.
And then we filled in for a year, and then we came back, and then it became pretty apparent that I was going to be, having to transition. And matter of fact, I was praying in the back parking lot, and God, the story, Isaac and Abraham and Isaac, right?
Yeah.
And God brings that story up to my mind because I'm praying about North Shore and what to do. And God says, well, you're going to just have to put Isaac on the altar. I go, awesome. I know that story. That's easy to do. And God says, yeah, but here's the hitch in that thing is you don't get Isaac back. And I go, that is not how that story goes. Yeah. I've read your word. I know, right? And you know what God's comeback was? Yeah, and you're not Abraham.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. I went, oh, boom,
blown up,
man. Sitting there bawling in a pickup truck. Just, you can't do that. And, yeah, you can.
Hmm.
So it just turns out that Northview was in a transition. Their head guy had left or was in the process of
it. Were they originally a North Shore plant too or not? They were, okay.
Yeah, North Shore, Dan Rupp, Dan and Jamie, and they planted from North Shore up into Mill Creek. They're at Jackson High School to start with.
Yep.
And Dan was stepping down, so a bunch of Northview people wanted me to throw my hat in the ring, and so I threw my hat. I went to the elder board at North Shore and said, hey, it looks like North Shore's got to go this way. It looks like I got to go this way. Hmm. Do I have your freedom to throw my hat in the ring? They said, yeah, you do. And it was so tense. Northview was very fragile at that point. Matter of fact, Bob Wright, my beloved buddy, he helped pay for my salary for November and December and then half salary for January, February, and March.
Man.
And we just made it off the runway, like 3 feet to spare.
Amazing, yeah.
And so it was a miraculous.
Was he on the board at that point then?
He was on the North Shore board.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the chairman of the board.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. So that's how I got to Northview.
Gotcha.
And if you want another story off of that, so I went and met with their search committee, and they're all friends of mine, and one of the gals, Jennifer Savage, is a HR person, so she was in her HR mode. So, Steve, if you you know, were to come as the pastor of Northview, can you tell us why you're called to be the pastor of Northview? And I go, nope.
That's an excellent
answer.
That's
the best answer.
Everybody just looked and they stared and like, and they're like, and I said, hey guys, I'm not trying to, I said, look, I have no idea where I am. I am so emotionally upside down. North Shore was my family, my tribe, my, it wasn't a job. It was, so I have no clue where I am and I have no clue where Jesus is in this thing. And I, you know, I see people use that language and usually that's where they want to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're using that. And I said, I couldn't tell you if I'm supposed to do this or not. But I said, a question that I would ask if I were you guys is if I were to come, what kind of pastor would I be? Would that be helpful? They said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. So I spent about 20 minutes just saying, look, I'm more of a shepherd. Here's what we go after. We go after relational integrity and all that kind of stuff. And got done. They said, wow, that's awesome. That's exactly what we need. And then like a real smart aleck, I said, well, I guess then if you were to call me, I would be called to be the pastor.
There you go.
Just flip it back on them.
And one of the guys just was beating the table. Holly said, I didn't like you up to that point. That sold it. That was great. So I started at Northview on November 8th of 2004.
Yeah. I didn't realize it started on kind of almost a down note for you. You know, interesting. Yeah. I mean, it was probably some excitement to start Northview and like, oh, new thing here. But it's interesting that you were coming off of the kind of a high of North Shore and their experience there.
No, I was, that was a tough leave.
It was devastating leave.
Devastating leave. And I never wanted to be a head pastor.
Yeah.
I was a youth guy and I, you know, you can boom, 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 and nobody knew what happened, right?
Totally.
Love it. Right? And head guy, I don't like the politics. Yep. I don't like the pedestal. Yep. I don't like the target.
Yeah.
I thought, head guys, that's stupid. Who'd ever want to do that?
Right? I still think that most of the time, by the way.
So I joke that I'm an old youth guy who never wanted to be a head guy and lost the argument. Right. Yep. So that's how that worked out.
Once again, God's like, watch this.
That was kind of how it worked. And Northview was really broken, and I was really broken, and it was kind of a beautiful mesh.
Why were they broken? Cool. Was it just because a leader had left and it was just heartbreak over that?
Or? Yeah, and it had kind of fallen apart and a lot of people had left. Matter of fact, when I showed up at Northview, there were probably like 20 families sitting on the circumference out there watching.
Yeah.
And when I came, they all left.
Oh, wow.
So we had
that new guy.
Yeah, there were like 30 people, 30, 40 people.
Man.
When I came. Right?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the Lord was, it's a miracle there's a church there and it's a miracle it survived. So we have nothing but gratefulness for how God has
worked. What were some of your highlights at Northview? You spent 17 years there, 17 and a half, maybe. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Was another half year?
Yeah, another half year. It's June.
Yeah. You have a style.
Yeah. What were some of your highlights there of ministry? You'd say, man, and I say this, you know, I think I know you. I know you're super humble, but I'd love for you to like brag a little bit here. Like, what were some of the things you saw like the Lord doing at Northview through the years?
There's some really beautiful things. First of all, the group of people. Huh. One of the reasons I came to Northview was because of the people.
That's great.
And a lot of them are friends of mine. I'd known them before, but they decided that one of the core DNA things of that group was that they always believed God had a place for them. You know, we were talking earlier how hard it is to get a place in the Northwest, and they were talking about they believed God had a place for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Dan came up with, let's do a capital campaign so that we will raise money for a place. Didn't have a target, but they said we're going to raise the money and believe God's got a place. So that little group of people raised $300,000.
Wow. Man.
Towards nothing.
Yep.
And there were miraculous stories with it where a couple would wake up, they'd have dreams, and the husband would look at the wife and go, what are you doing up? I was dreaming. And what were you dreaming about? The capital campaign. Well, that's weird. So was I. And they compare notes, and not only did God tell them, one, they had to stay at Northview, which really irritated a number of them. Because they were being polite, right?
Yeah.
They were
the
stay.
New guy. Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then the foot out the door, right? But we were gracious kind of thing. So they had to stay. Number two, they had to give the campaign. And number three, which is really unusual of the Lord, is that they had to give specific amounts. And some of them were really sacrificial
amounts. Like painful.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did. That's cool. little broken group raised $300,000.
My goodness. Yeah.
And I said, I can run with them.
Yeah.
That's a group of faith. I can do that. Mm-hmm. So I saw something in them that just delighted me.
Yeah.
And I went, that's my kind of people. I want to run with that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you moved out of the high school then and found that building. Is that right? Because so you guys are in kind of.
Well,
Canyon
we went
Park,
from
Mill
Jackson
okay.
to Archbishop Murphy.
Oh, did you?
The okay. Catholic yeah. high school yeah. there. And we were there. And then we moved into the warehouse building that we're in. And that's an incredible story.
Yeah.
Of all how that turned out. We became aware of it. This is kind of a fun story because the guy who owns the building, our landlord, is a young guy, a young guy. He was in his 30s, and his dad had run a business, and so he took the business over. And if one of these cases where the son was way more successful than the father, and so this guy Jacob is really sharp, and so he had this other company. I won't mention names, but they were using both spaces but not paying for the second half.
Oh.
So he said, well, I'm going to lease this out. And they were thinking, well, go ahead, because there's no bathroom, there's no water, there's only a gas heater up in the corner. Who's going to want it? Well, he put it out, and four groups applied for it. Well, a couple were turnkey sort of things, and one of them was us.
Oh.
Kirk and Sherry Mitchell do real estate. They saw it on their – they said, hey, Steve, isn't that – the place we looked at before, I think it's up for rent. So we went and looked at it. So he interviewed all the people, and we were the last ones. And so we get there, and he's got his lawyer guy and his real estate guy, and he's sitting there talking, and they're doing their real estate stuff. And we're sitting across the table just like this. And he looks at me, and he says, you know, Steve, I'm Jewish. And his name is Davis. And I went, what?
Yeah.
David, that's not Jewish. And he goes, well, that's not a real name. Well, what's your real family? It's a Davidovich. I said, Davidovich. I said, Polish. And he, like, how do you know that? I said, I bet you not only Polish, but I said Warsaw. And he goes, what? And I said, I bet you not just Warsaw, but East Warsaw. Oh, man, you could have knocked him out of that chair. he thought I was a mind reader. And he goes, how in the world do you know that? I said, well, Jacob, it's not that easy. I grew up in Wisconsin with all the immigrants.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, Davidoviches, they all came from East Warsaw. Yeah. I was just guessing.
There's a town called that.
And he, from that moment, when we walked out, what his real estate guy told us later, he told Kirk, he said, you guys walked out. He said, we're going with them. I like that guy.
Huh.
So my silly Sugarbush background got us the lease for the building.
Man.
And you, like, what are the odds of that?
That's
right?
Amazing.
So that's
when did you move in there? What year was that?
We signed the lease in 2007, and we moved in on Father's Day of 2008, June 15th.
Because you had a lot of kind of retro construction to do, didn't
Complete.
You?
Complete. Yeah, it was a $2.1 million build out to make it. And then we got stuck. We went to a men's retreat, and the board never went to the retreat because we were trying to figure out the numbers. But we didn't have enough money to finish the second floor. And we found out from the county that unless we finished the second floor, we couldn't move in. That wasn't true before. Yeah.
Yep.
And so we were really stuck. So we spent the whole retreat praying and looking, and my numbers guys were crunching their numbers, and they came out and said, we can't do it. Can't do it. So they said, what are you going to do? I said, well, we're going to tell the church. We got a building, we can't move in, and we're going to have to faith it and see where Jesus has taken it. And so I was all prepared to do that. And Matt Chu, a guy I was telling you I had lunch with today, was our chairman at the time, and he calls me up Monday morning. He's babbling. I cannot figure out, is he laughing? Is he crying? Is he, what is he? And he's talking away, you know? And I said, dude, talk in English. What are you saying? And he finally slows down enough, and he says, Steve, it's here. It's here. And I go, what's here? He said, I got home from the retreat. A guy walked up to me, said, I heard about the need. The money will be in the bank on Monday.
Huh?
And he says, it's here. Steve, there's $500,000 in the bank this morning for the build out. And so, like, miracle number two. So we literally were able to finish that whole thing and move in on Father's Day of that year. So incredible stuff that God.
What an amazing story of provision that God has.
Man. Yeah.
We need that story right now at Imprint Church because we want to find a place for what was Imprint Bothell.
Right.
And maybe hopefully in the future we'll be Imprint
Bothell. Talked with Tom. Yeah.
And so, we just need stories like that because the Lord is in charge of those things. And I mean, you saw it firsthand. Yeah. And it's cool that you can look back and see those.
Yeah, we saw it. And I think a real positive side, but other people would say a real negative side, is that when we went into the building program, I'd been an 8 building programs at North Shore. And I said, now, look, we can do this, but you better be ready for spiritual warfare, because if we do this, we're going to get our tails kicked.
Yeah.
Okay. And they all laughed at me, smirked. Matt smirked at me. I was like, you're smirking. And they were like, that's cute pastor speak.
Yeah.
Like, we're businessmen, right?
Yeah, we're just going to take care of this.
Man, let me tell you, those guys went through hell in a handbasket. Huh. And Matt just had experience. He came back to me and said, okay, I apologize.
Huh.
You're right. There's things going on that cannot be accounted for.
It's a spiritual battle.
It really is.
So he, you know, those guys really came around the corner realizing, boy, when you try to do something like that, there's a spiritual component that you really got to be aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was another... It was fun to watch them go through it, and I didn't have to.
yeah, because you knew it.
I sat back.
You'd seen it. You'd seen it.
Here we go. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. Both stories you've mentioned there, I guess, of you stepping into Northview and then the building project and then parts of the building project. There's just a lot of leading in faith.
Yeah.
Is that something that you learned, or is that just something that, like, the moment came and you were like, no, I think this is what we have to do. Like, I feel like we're following the Lord here, and so he's going to show up.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say it's a combination of things that probably developed all through my ministry life with Jan mentoring me and stuff, and that it kind of, I always had a lot of faith, and I think it kind of emerged in those moments in a clearer way
in
than it ever had before. Because people say, does this always happen to you? I said, never seen this happen before in my life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
hey, by the way, Jan, if you're listening to this, I've emailed you twice asking to be on this podcast. So, this is my way of shaming you. So,
great.
So, can I ask another question? I want to hear, you're at the end of your career.
Yes. And Sunday was my last Sunday. Amazing. In the pulpit.
So, looking back over the past, not just 17 years at Northview, but maybe your 30 years in ministry, like, what do you say are, like, this was a high point of ministry for me, or something that I knew that God was in, or something? And then I'd like to know the opposite too. What was the hardest part of ministry for you?
Hardest part, somebody asked me, what's been the biggest surprise for you over the years being in this context, it was being a head guy.
Yeah.
And I said, the amount of change of staff. I never would have dreamed there would have been that much turnover.
Huh. Yeah.
I'm a loyalty guy. I think I'm easy to work with. I think I'm a delightful guy to work for.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I just assumed everybody would stay like we did at North Shore.
Yeah.
And we've had several seasons of turnover. The message last Sunday was the fine art of pruning.
Yeah.
And I just took the church through 4 seasons of pruning that we went through that all dealt with staff turnover.
Interesting. Man. Yeah.
I never would have dreamed we'd gone through that many people.
Was that painful for you to
see
very.
People
go? Because again, you're seeing like this is, I know you said the North Shore, like this is more than just work.
I'm a
this
for
is
life.
Family.
Yeah. I'm a for life person, right?
So, yeah.
Well, church ministry is weird too, because we make a joke around here that, like, you can move from Boeing to Amazon and not lose your friends.
Yeah.
But moving churches,
you
lose your friends in ministry anyway. And that's painful.
That's true.
Yeah. I said, you know, that I was riding with my wife and Kayla's my oldest daughter. She's the children's director at Northview. And we were talking about this, and I said, I don't get it. And she goes, Dad, you don't understand. You're freaking people out. And I go, what do you mean I'm freaking people out? She says, well, you talking 5-10-year increments. Dad, my generation is thinking like 6 months.
Interesting.
And she says, that you are talking, they have no category.
Huh.
I said, well, you don't do that. She says, that's because I grew up with you.
Yeah.
She said, but outside of that context, you are freaking people out.
Wow.
And it sounds like a prison sentence to them.
Huh.
It doesn't sound like good, it sounds bad, because you're limiting their momentum and their mobility and their movement to move up the ladder.
As a millennial, I think I can understand that. That's something.
Yeah, but and I was like,
I also think there's something really cool and missing that you don't see a lot of, that whole long obedience in the same direction. Mm-hmm. Like my youth pastor, he actually just passed away when I was growing up. He was a youth guy for like 30 years.
Yeah.
And it sounds like what you were
aiming
at.
A legend.
Yeah, and it was amazing. And he never had aspirations to, like, it wasn't like he was lazy. He just loved what he was doing. He never had aspirations to move past it. He later stepped into like more pastoral care and that kind of thing. But that's all he ever wanted to do was pastor people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting Yeah, I don't know. There's, I don't know if it's more of like a career view of ministry or what, but there's something to that. Like, let's just stay faithful where we are.
Used to hear a lot of, if you go back even 20 years ago, more 30 years ago, people were called to, for example, children's ministry. They're called to youth ministry. They're called to young adults. They were called to married couples, like being an associate pastor was, right? You were called to that. It wasn't where now you have these roles and they're just stepping stones.
It's a trajectory.
So the problem is that's great, but like when I talk with youth guys, I try to tell them nothing happens in the first 4 years.
That's true.
You're just building foundation.
Yeah.
And I said, you've got to stick around to the 7-8 year mark to really see the fruit. And that just pops their cork, right?
8 years, their eyes go crossed, and they start.
I would concur. I feel like it takes 5 to 10 years to build trust, right? Yeah. Enough to kind of see people actually just listen to what you have to say, even, you know, and that's kind of a unique thing in ministry. And knowing that to be the case, and especially our transitory. I heard Rick Warren years ago say that he feels like he's preaching to a parade because in Southern California, so many people are moving and just moving and moving. And we found that to be the case. Yeah. Both our churches have experienced a lot. You had a significant loss of people in your church.
Yeah, during the last 2 years of COVID, we've had 40 families leave for other locations in the United States.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And that's hard. Yeah, we've had probably 20-ish families leave, and we've seen a ton of people come, too, you know, and that's unique. Yeah. And so it's almost like this reinventing of just building and trust and doing what you can.
It redefines, like, what does it mean to belong?
Yep.
Right? Yeah. What is it? What does community look like?
Yes.
What does?
Yeah.
Because that kind of transitory nature changes the ability to have roots.
Well, in an era of, you know, if you want to grow your church, just be partisan. That's the way to do it nowadays, partisan in terms of politics. Mm-hmm. And for those of us who say we're going to live above that and not live on that plane, it's hard to kind of build a trust, or it's hard to kind of help people know and follow.
People are saying, what did you really mean by that when you said that?
Yeah, yeah. And so I appreciate churches that are like, no, we're going to stick to the gospel message. We're going to fight for what the Bible says. We're going to have people from all walks of life and all differences in their church and you know, do our best to help them understand the gospel and what the Bible says. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one downer.
Yeah.
The second downer, I would say, is... we've done a really good job of health and shepherding our people. I'd say Northview is an incredibly healthy church. But in terms of impacting Mill Creek, we have really not made much of an impact that we know of. We tried a bunch of stuff. We had stuff rolling, and it just we for example, they have a Mill Creek Festival, right? Yeah. A lot of people go to it. And we did inflatables. Paid for the inflatables, manned the inflatables for the whole festival, and had kids in, and they actually didn't want us to show up again because we're drawing too many people away from the festival.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, no, yeah.
And so they canned it. So we're like...
We're trying to help.
Now what do we do?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, there were things like that that you're like, wow, that was disappointing.
Yeah.
Really disappointing. So, you know, you wish you'd had a greater impact.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not for... pride or no, just from the sense of the Lord, you know, you relationally, we probably have had a huge one.
Yeah.
But community wise, probably not.
Not as much as How about some highlights, like some other highlights you'd say, man, these are things that in Northview,
just over the, so even, grateful even for. Just over the whole course of ministry.
Yeah.
These
Great stuff. Family meals. We do a family meal once every quarter, and we basically finish. And it's to the point where I get up, I say, okay, Northview, here we go, boom, and the chairs are down, the table's up, it's reset, and back in 50 minutes, everybody's in, we got 180 people, and the tables are set, and the food's going, and they roll, and we talk, and visit.
Is it like potluck style or something?
Yeah,
that's
fabulous.
Super fun. That's awesome. Great.
Yeah. And it's just fantastic.
That's cool.
And, you know, we do a bunch of things like that. Another one is Church in the Park.
Yeah.
So we, up at Willis Tucker Park, every August, last Sunday, August, this will be the August 28th.
Sweet.
Yep. It's going to be the really last brouhaha for me.
Yeah.
We do Church in the Park there, and it's out in the open. We don't meet at church. We meet out in the park.
That's cool. Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
You've been doing that for years?
Yeah, doing that for years. That's just great stuff.
Yeah.
So there's lots of stuff like that that's just wonderful.
That's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I love how some of the churches actually reflect a little bit of what it seems to be as your personality too. Like that relational, like let's get together and have meals together, that pastor shepherd thing that you have. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. And I appreciate how God gives us pastors for different churches for different times.
100%.
Like your personality was meant for Northview for a time, and the Lord used that personality, and I'm grateful for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be so many people who listen to this podcast who's like, I know Mitch, I know him, I know he loves the Lord, and he made a significant impact on me.
What's funny, if you're from North Shore, it's Mitch. If you're from Northview, it's Steve. That's how you know where
they're... Well, it's funny. I was hired by North Shore for a couple of years, I knew you as Mitch.
That's how you know that's where they're from. If they say, Mitch, you're North Shore.
That's so funny. That's amazing.
So I have another question. It's kind of back to the whole calling thing. I know that you said you stepped into Northview, and it was like, let's see if this works, Lord. That was kind of it. Yeah. When did you know that it was like time to start stepping back? And again, you stepped out of pastoral role here. When did you know that it was time to start thinking about
that? Basically, if your nursery's empty in your church, you're dead.
Right?
And we were starting. Now, I'm really good, and I do not look 66. I don't act 66. I don't sound 66, but I'm 66.
Yeah.
Right? And so the reality is we were drifting, albeit maybe slower than others, but we were still drifting, and the church was aging along with me. Right? We all raised our kids together. And I said to the church about 4 years ago, I said, we've got to do something to put the curve, the medium back this way, right? Down somewhere in the 40 range, right? And I said, because we're not attracting young families anymore, and I know you guys don't want to talk about this, so I'll talk about it, but we need to talk about transition, and we need to talk about getting somebody, and we need to talk about the next step for Northview, because otherwise we're going to just age out and be a bunch of old people together.
Yeah.
And so I started that on purpose, having watched all the years, guys usually hang on 2 to 3
years. A
little
too long, yeah.
Longer than they should.
Yeah.
Right? And because nobody wants me to leave. People were bawling on Sunday.
Sure.
But you've got to, now we're not leaving. We're staying at Northview.
Yeah. Yeah.
But stepping out of the role, you've got to do that and get, James is 42, my guy who's there, and he's going to be dynamic, he's going to be fantastic, and young families are coming because of them.
I just met him, he seems awesome, he seems like a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's cool, you've planned a transition with him, right?
Yeah.
Like you've planned a way
He's been on staff for 1.5 years.
Wow.
Yep.
That's really cool.
That's awesome. I think a planned transition like that, having the foresight to know like, not that you're reaching the end of vitality or usefulness, but more just like influence. Like we need new voices here in order to actually continue to do what this church wants to do into the future.
Well, the most dangerous person in the mix is the head pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're a culture steerer in the biggest way. You're the voice that people associate with a church. So it's up to you to kind of create a culture in which someone else can step in.
Yeah.
So it was like a 3-year process, you said? 4-year process?
4-year process, yeah.
Man.
Right in the middle of COVID.
Oh,
beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have to throw up all the disclaimers? Like, I promise this isn't because of COVID. Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
I appreciate your comments earlier about one of the joys of, well, one of the hardest parts of being part of the ministry is watching your staff overturn or whatever it is. But I take the opposite as true as well. One of your greatest joys has probably been working with great staff.
Great staff.
We know your staff. We're super excited to go with your team, with our youth group.
Yeah, Rob and them go to Montana.
Go to Montana this summer. Yeah. In fact, by the time this plays, we might be back from Montana.
Maybe so.
I'm not sure when our timing is. But it's so cool that we get to partner together. And you, Steve, have served as kind of the leader of our North Sound Network, which is a convergence. I use that kind of a funny word of church planters in the area and churches in the area that are like-minded and connected. A lot of them are connected to Converge, the denomination as well. And you've been leading us for a couple of years. And we get together once a month and pray and have lunch. And some of us, when we can do it, get together. And that's been a huge encouragement to me through the years. I mean, I remember in my early days, I would go every month without fail. Mm-hmm. It's been the last couple of years, it's been harder with COVID and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's been such a joy, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for this partnership that we have and for the gospel in this area. So I guess to kind of close this thing out a little bit, we always ask to our people who are listening to this that as soon as the cool music ends, to stop and pray for Steve Mitchell's and Northview Community Church. And with that, what are a couple of things we can pray for you and for your and for Northview?
I would say two things specifically. One, so we're going to just take the rest of the summer and play. We've got several camps since the Bighorn.
You're coming
going
to Bighorn.
Going to Bighorn. I'm heading to Wisconsin doing a nephew's wedding. in August, and then so we'll be gone pretty much the month of August, the whole month, then back for Church in the Park. And then I said in September, I'll decide what I'm going to do when I grow up. Right. Yeah. So just prayer for that, what the Lord would have.
Yep.
And I would really appreciate prayer for James Lunn. He's the senior pastor now as of Sunday.
Amazing.
And his dad is in a major health crisis.
Oh, no.
And very sick. And we've been praying. Odds are real good. He won't last very long. Mm-hmm. And we did the handoff now so it would be better. It couldn't have been more disastrous for him.
Yeah.
And so just that lift that family up in prayer. You can imagine how hard you're taking the reins of a church and your dad's dying.
Yeah.
It's just so difficult. So I know that he would deeply appreciate those would be the two.
James Lunn. Is
James
his name.
Lunn, L-U-N-N.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so
James
glad.
James and Sarah.
That's cool. I'm really glad. Hopefully we get to partner together in the future with more things like that in this long-term relationship we've had.
He'd be a great one to get on this.
Oh, we should. You want to talk
energy.
Totally
do it. You should put a bug in his ear for that.
Yeah. Well, I might email him and mention that to him as well. Because these are great. They're so encouraging.
You can just say, Steve said.
No, you could say Mitch said, and he'd say, who?
Mitch. Who's Mitch? Yeah. Well, brother, on behalf of myself and our church, thank you for your years of ministry. Thank you for investing in us as Imprint Church as well, both in leadership, experience, words of grace at various times, and financially, way back in the day when your church decided to pitch in some money for us to get us going. You know, we've hopefully returned that favor. We have several our churches that have come on here where we've been able to give a chunk of money to, which is like, this is amazing.
It's crazy.
What a cool
pay it forward
kingdom mindedness. And you did. And you paid it forward. And now hopefully we'll see that same thing happen and multiply into the future. So thank you for your faithfulness to Jesus.
Yeah.
Thank you for finishing well. Like there's pastors that aren't finishing well right
there's
now.
There's a lot,
And I need to see people like you finish well. I'm not at the end of my career. I'm turning the corner towards the there's a finish line in the sight somewhere.
You're so pessimistic about this, Darren.
I
talked to you like 2 years.
But Tom Regan's older than
that's
I am.
True.
I just want everyone to know
that's
that.
True.
He's a whole year older than I am.
When I first got here, even it was like almost 4 years ago now, you were like, I'm running out of usefulness. I was like, Darren, come on, man.
You guys are puppy dogs compared to me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anyway, brother, we love you. I'm grateful for you.
Thank you. Very wonderful to be here. Yeah. Enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah. All right, guys. We will see you next week with another story of what's going on in the area and churches. Don't forget, stop right after this goes, what's up?
Oh, we got to say, if people want to get a hold of you, can they just find you on Northview's website, by the way, still for a while?
Yep.
Okay, if you want to send Steve an encouraging note or anything like that.
Yeah, stevem@nview.org.
There you go.
Yep. Do it. Yeah, send it away. Don't forget, stop, pray for Steve, pray for Northview right after this is over. So we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.